Good morning, welcome to the Sunday, August 28th, 2016 edition of Waking Up, Freeing Ourselves from Work. Sisters and brothers, the longing for freedom didn't start with us, and the theory of how to suppress it didn't start with them. To end class, we have to know how it began, at least it's present totalitarian iteration. Karl Popper describes this longing for freedom as being manifested in the transition from the closed society, which he refers to as tribalism, to the open society, which I think of as freedom. Quote, much evidence of this development, and by this development, he's talking about the breakdown of the closed society of Athens with the development of sea communications and commerce. And this is what Popper means by the word imperialism. Continuing, Much evidence of this development can be found in Thucydides' History of the Peloponnesian War, or rather, of the two great wars of 431 to 421, and we're talking BC, and 418 to 403, between Athenian democracy and the arrested oligarchic tribalism of Sparta. And as reference, Plato was born in these turbulent times. He lived from 428 to 348 BC, continuing with Popper. When reading Thucydides, we must never forget that his heart was not with Athens, his native city, although he apparently did not belong to the extreme wing of the Athenian oligarchic clubs who conspired through the war with the enemy. He was certainly a member of the oligarchic party and a friend neither of the Athenian people, the Demos, who had exiled him, nor of its imperialist policy. And Popper says he doesn't intend to belittle Thucydides, the greatest historian, perhaps, who ever lived. But however successful he was in making sure of the facts he records, and however sincere his efforts to be impartial, his comments and moral judgments represent an interpretation, a point of view, and in this we need not agree with him. Thucydides writes, quote, certain Athenians were privately making overtures to them, i.e., to the Spartans, in the hope that they would put an end to the democracy and to the building of the long walls. But the other Athenians suspected their design against democracy, and the loyal Athenian citizens, therefore, went out to meet the Spartans and were defeated. Nearly, and this is quoting Thucydides, nearly the whole Hellenic world was in commotion. In every city, the leaders of the democratic and of the oligarchic parties were trying hard, the one to bring in the Athenians, the other, the Lacedaemonians. The tie of party was stronger than the tie of blood. The leaders on either side used specious names, the one party professing to uphold the constitutional equality of the many, the other, the wisdom of the nobility. In reality, they made the public interest their price, professing, of course, their devotion to it. They used any conceivable means for getting the better of one another and committed the most monstrous crimes. And again, we are quoting Thucydides. Thanks to Karl Popper from The History of the Peloponnesian War. I suspect that it is by reference to illustrations such as this of the amorality of rule that the present would-be gods justify their own monstrous crimes. Continuing with Thucydides, this revolution gave birth to every form of wickedness in Hellas. Everywhere prevailed an attitude of perfidious antagonism. There was no word binding enough, no oath terrible enough to reconcile enemies. Each man was strong only in the conviction that nothing was secure. Spartan methods, and this is continuing with Karl Popper, Spartan methods were dominated by the ultimate aim that dominated its policy, by its attempt to arrest all change and to return to tribalism. This is impossible, says Karl Popper, as I shall contend later on. Innocence, once lost, cannot be regained, and an artificially arrested closed society or a cultivated tribalism cannot equal the genuine article. And that's unquote from Karl Popper, The Open Society and Its Enemies, Volume 1, The Spell of Plato. And here we must keep in mind that what he is talking about is the attempt of a self-organized band of rulers, the current version of which are the Plato's tribesmen, to artificially impose tribalism, which is what a society of rigid class divisions is an expression of, i.e., everyone confines their identity to their narrow group, while the Plato's tribesmen, it just so works out, remain forever on top. Everyone plays their position and is artificially, because they are told they are from infancy, artificially happy. The society is closed to change, to new ideas, to thought, to growth. But once the quest for the open society, for freedom, begins, we cannot be turned from our determination to achieve it. Jesus of Nazareth being one of the most potent examples of this, quote, "I am the root and the offspring of David and the bright and morning star." And says the prophet John from John the First, Book 4, "And we have known and believed the love that God hath to us. God is love, and he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him. Therein is our love made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment," which I interpret as when power tests us. Because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear, because fear hath torment. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. We love him because he first loved us. If a man say, "I love God," and hateth his brother, he's a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God loveth his brother also. And this brings us to our question for today. What is the root by which love for our own freedom becomes the imperative for love for all my brothers and sisters?